Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, "Hey, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream." I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And Lauren is not asleep. She's actually feeling under the weather, so she's not here.
She might be asleep. If she's feeling under the weather, I hope she's asleep.
She just emailed me. She could be a sleep emailer. But this is kind of leading into the fact that we're going to talk about the future of sleep. So it was actually on topic for once.
Okay. I'm hoping that in the future, we can just phase out sleep entirely.
It's just a waste of time.
I'm one of those people who, I mean, like, I enjoy getting rest when I've been working hard and I'm very tired, but, you know, it would be great to just have more time in the day.
Well, you know, there are I've seen people say that if you were able to adopt an ideal sleeping schedule, as in ideal as in this is the least amount of time that you could theoretically spend sleeping, that you would essentially have the equivalent waking hours to get 11 more years of life if you started in your early 20s.
Yeah, I wonder if that's one of those things being propagated by these weird sleep pattern enthusiasts on the internet.
Yeah, we'll get to that and talk about what those weird sleep patterns are and the implications of them.
Yeah, well, okay, so if we're going to talk about the future of sleep, hacking sleep, how sleep patterns can change over time, first, we should talk about sleep itself, because it's kind of a weird and mysterious topic in science.
Yeah, in fact, there's still a lot we do not know about the sleep cycle.
Isn't that weird?
It is weird to think, like, this is something that we all do, you know, we all do it regularly, whether or not you get good sleep or not, you still, I assume, are going to sleep, or I don't know how you're listening to this podcast. From a survival perspective, it at first seems kind of weird.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine how it would confer an evolutionary advantage to lay down and expose yourself to predators for 8 hours or however long.
Well, let's think about this for a second. So there are a lot of different theories about what happens when we're asleep, and we'll get into those. But one thing I might suggest as a reason why we need to have this time to sleep is just purely, and this is just a hypothesis here. There's no necessarily science to back this up, but purely from an energy perspective, right? Uh-huh. It requires energy for us to be awake. We're active. We consume energy. That's why we have to eat throughout the day in order to maintain that level of energy, or else we are no longer capable of being active and alert. If we were active and alert all the time, we would require to eat more frequently. And because we're not evolved to be able to do something like, I don't know, navigate pitch black darkness without falling over ourselves and hurting ourselves, being able to gather food or hunt food at night, we can't, it's harder for us to do that. So it may be that it's evolutionary beneficial for us to go ahead and, well, shut down during the time of day when we can't really be effective.
It's just a cut your losses. It's a calculated risk to say, like, you're not going to be doing much useful at night anyway, and you're going to be burning all these calories.
That's the hypothesis. And keep in mind that when we're talking about evolution, evolution happens over the course of hundreds of thousands of years, right? Because you could argue, well, today we've got artificial lights, you know, the difference between night and day is not as great, but it's not like we could evolve past what we have already established in the relatively short amount of time. Like, if you're looking on a geological scale, it's a blink of an eye since we've had any kind of artificial light source.
We can't evolve that fast as a whole species, but it might be interesting that some certain individuals of the human race have a certain mutation that helps them in this environment where we have artificial light and can do things useful at night. But first, and we'll talk about that later also.
Yep.
First, let's back up and talk about other animals. Do sure. All animals sleep?
No. Mammals, birds, and reptiles sleep. All right.
Huh.
So they're the higher vertebrates. You can think of it that way. So when you're looking at the animal kingdom, the higher vertebrates all sleep.
So like more complex brains.
Maybe? Yeah. Yeah. That would be part of it. More complex nervous systems would probably be a better way of putting it. But yes, if you look at fish and amphibians, most of those have some means of shutting down some of their awareness, but they're still not asleep. They're still awake, but they're kind of, it's like they go to impulse power instead of warp speed.
Okay.
Right. So they're able to power down a little bit and recuperate, but they don't go to sleep. Insects may not sleep at all, but they just have periods of activity versus inactivity, whether it's day or night or whatever. It depends on the insect.
Okay.
But they don't go to sleep. Other thing that's interesting that's related to this is dreaming. And we'll talk a lot about dreaming in this episode as well. But reptiles do not dream.
Really?
They don't. Birds dream a little bit, and all mammals dream. And this is based off of various scientific studies where the scientists were monitoring brainwave activity during sleep cycles for these various types of animals. So the next time you see like an alligator and you're wondering what's that alligator dreaming of, the answer is nothing at all, because alligators don't dream.
Wow, not even delicious raw chicken?
Nope. To them, the world just goes away for a while and then it comes back. That's the basics, but then we get into some other, you know, this raises some other questions, like, all right, so these larger, the more developed vertebrates, all sleep and so most of them dream, to some extent. Why is this happening? Why do our bodies even need to sleep in the first place?
Do we grow while we sleep?
Well, as when we're children, we do.
Yeah.
Because when you're a kid and you are sleeping, your body releases growth hormone. And so it's very important in those phases. It doesn't release during your wake cycle. So when you're awake, you know, this growth hormone doesn't get secreted. But when you go to sleep, it does. Very important for our immune system. If you were to suffer sleep deprivation for long enough, your immune system would start to really suffer as a result. You end up kind of secreting again these chemicals in your body that help maintain your immune system. So sleep's very important there too. And you know, also there are other hypotheses out there that are there may be a lot of truth to them. There may be very little truth. It may be that all of them are true, but things like that's when our body repairs itself.
Yeah.
So if you were to suffer injury, then when you're sleeping, your body can really get on to the job of fixing tissue and getting, you know, shedding dead cells, that kind of stuff.
I know there are a lot of different hypotheses about what's going on in the brain during sleep. Like, are there sort of necessary internal brain maintenance tasks that happen only when you're asleep?
That's a big one. The idea that, you know, there are a lot of different theories about what's going on when you're dreaming, and that whether or not dreaming is part of your brain trying to make sense of the information that you've gathered since you were last asleep. So it's kind of like, you know, the filing of at the end of the day, sort of that kind of thing, or that it's just kind of getting rid of nonsense information. There are a lot of different hypotheses out there, but there are some things we can definitively point at. One is that when you go to sleep, your breathing rate slows down, your heart rate slows down, and your brain begins to generate different types of brain waves. So these waves, you know, they have oscillation frequencies, right?
These are electrically measurable.
Yeah. You put sensors on the skull and you're reading those brain waves, just like you've probably seen in some television shows or movies, you could actually monitor the brain activity. And normal wakeful activity, you have alpha waves that are generated when you're kind of, you know, in a relaxed, chilled out state.
Mm-hmm.
Beta waves are generated when you're really alert. So those are the two that are the most frequent in your wakeful moments. When you go to sleep, you start to generate different brain waves, the delta waves and the theta waves. So these are slower. They have slower or lower frequencies, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And the slower pattern kind of indicates how deep a sleep you're in. And the slower the pattern, the deeper the sleep. So it's harder to wake someone up when they're having delta wave activity.
And these are a variable based on your sleep cycle, right? That you go through different stages of sleep.
Exactly. Yeah. It's your activity does change There are times when the activity starts to spike, like in REM sleep. That's rapid eye movement sleep. This is when we're talking about dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've ever been awakened while you were in REM sleep, then you probably have at least some recollection of what your dream was. It's a lot harder to remember for most people what they dreamed or didn't dream if they wake up in non-REM sleep. It's just because the activity is removed from when they actually wake up. And most people have between 3 to 5 sessions of REM sleep per night. It tends to be about a quarter of a typical good night's sleep. So you get about 25% REM sleep and 75% non-REM sleep. You know, it's, again, this also appears to be pretty important. It's one of those things that if you don't get that REM sleep, that's considered, like, you can start suffering sleep deprivation. So you could, you know, catch little naps here and there, but if you're not getting REM sleep, you're not getting that restful sleep. You don't feel rested.
That's the hard stuff.
Yeah.
It's what's really good.
It's the stuff when you wake up after a really good night's sleep and you feel refreshed, it's cause you had that REM sleep. So it's not just because you were inactive and restful. It's because this has been going on.
Okay, so this is really useful. What happens to the body when we don't get enough sleep? And I can speak from experience on this one.
Bad juju.
Yeah, it's no fun. I went through a lot of years in my life when I was not getting a whole lot of sleep. It's more recent in my life that I've started getting better sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just in, you know, college, grad school, I don't know why. Right. I was just one of those people.
So how many all-nighters have you done? Lots.
Uncountable.
Yeah. I've only done a few. I am one of those people who I realize what my severe limitations are if I don't have enough sleep because they affect me really. I mean, it's obvious if I haven't had enough sleep.
Have you ever had hallucinations?
I have too.
These aren't like lucid, crazy hallucinations. Like I'm seeing a monster climbing out of the floor. It's more like I remember things like after going like, you know, days in a row with almost no real sleep of any kind, seeing, feeling like I had seen something move in my peripheral vision and I'd turn to look and there'd be nothing there.
For me, it was a point where I could no longer read text because it would look like it was melting to me.
Wow.
I got to a point where I would try and read something and then I would start to nod off immediately. I've also gotten to the point where I started, talking without realizing what I was saying.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a great story about a friend of mine driving me home from the airport after a trip where I got no sleep really. And apparently I had some entertaining, absurd, surreal things to say, had no connection to anything connected to reality at all. And that was because I had sleep deprivation. So, I mean, if you're talking about going like a day without sleep or a day without enough sleep, you're talking about things like maybe not being able to focus as much upon a task as you normally would. Or
it's pretty standard for people to report after just one bad night's sleep that they lose focus and that they have decreased competence at standard tasks.
Right. Or that, and also that things irritate them a little more easily than it might otherwise, that their threshold for being irritated is lower.
Right.
But there are some serious effects that can happen. Like those hallucinations are pretty bad, but I mean, there's some even worse effects that can happen.
Well, you can actually die from lack of sleep.
In fact, you know, this is one of those wonderful tests that science has shown us, which, you know, it's one of those things that it's important to know. It's upsetting to think of the actual circumstances, but scientists would keep rats awake and watch to see what happened with the rats. It got to a point where rats that had been forced to stay awake for several days in a row would begin to die. And, you know, like we said, like the going to sleep, that has the means of helping regulate your immune system. So there are definite health risks to not getting enough sleep.
And it's a pretty widespread phenomenon that people don't get enough sleep. In the United States, at least, the CDC, they estimated that 40.6 million American workers, which is about 30% of all the people on the job, are sleep deprived.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see here, this is talking about the Singapore Management University said that workers were wasting time, more time than your average worker if they got less sleep?
Yeah, this is from a Wall Street Journal report on sleep deprivation. It's a huge problem, and it's estimated to account for billions of dollars of lost productivity in the American workforce.
So
just for zoning out, you know, people not being as efficient at tasks that they do every day.
Right. Having to redo something perhaps, or just taking extra time to be able to do something that normally you'd be able to accomplish in half the time, whatever. Like, you know, there are measurable effects.
Right. So getting sleep is important to you. It's important for your health. It's important for just being the kind of person you want to be.
Yeah.
But it's also important on a large scale in your society. Like, it's important if you are a government, you want to make sure people are getting enough sleep, because it has large scale implications.
That's definitely true. So one of the things I saw that you wanted to talk about was the kinds of sleep patterns we see in nature.
Yeah. Keeping all the things that we just talked about in mind, that sleep deprivation is a really serious problem with serious health effects and serious effects to productivity and all those kinds of things, it still would be great if we could maybe get more time, if we could find a way to sleep less
and
in a way that's
effective.
Totally still healthy,
right?
That you're just as healthy, just as happy, with no negative effects to your body, your brain, and your quality of life.
Sure.
And so the first thing I wondered about is, well, is the way we sleep now, the way most Westerners sleep now, so one long chunk of sleep at night that is supposed to be around 8 hours or so,
right,
is that normal? Is that normal to the species?
So, yes and no. So first of all, there are two main types of sleep patterns that you find in the animal world. Monophasic, which is this idea of having a big chunk of time.
The one chunk, yeah.
Yeah. And then there's polyphasic, which is where you divide this up over multiple, like, sleep sessions throughout a particular cycle.
Yeah, and a lot of these polyphasic, that's actually going to be biphasic, meaning you sleep twice.
Yeah, biphasic, you could argue, is sort of outside of polyphasic. Polyphasic, I think of as what my dog does.
Right. I am a fairly recent dog owner, and I've been noticing these dog behavior patterns. My new puppy will sleep for an hour, then get up and come look at me and wag his sweet little tail, and then go lie down and sleep for another hour and repeat, you know.
Yeah, it's very typical with canines. And then you have other animals, you have like cats that'll sleep for hours and hours and hours, and then they'll be active.
Yeah.
So that's the difference between monophasic and polyphasic. And then you can have, depending upon the type of animal, if it's, you know, nocturnal, then it's sleeping during the day. It may be monophasic, but its sleep session is in the daytime, not in the nighttime.
Yeah, I've heard examples of people saying that in history, people didn't necessarily always sleep in just one chunk.
Well, yeah, biphasic is something that is fairly common, and it's still common in some parts of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Biphasic is this idea.
If you go to Italy and they close all the shops in the early afternoon.
Or Spain as well.
Yeah.
Spain is also does this. Yeah. It's the whole siesta idea.
Yeah.
So biphasic means that you're dividing up your sleep into two sessions, but they're not equal. Right. You've got one longer session, which is the one at night, tends to be between 5 and 7 hours for most of these implementations. Sometimes it could be, you know, 5 to 8 hours, something like that. And then you take a second session of sleep around the 6th hour of your day, whenever that day starts.
Mm-hmm.
Your day is dependent upon when you wake up and when you get up. So it's not like it's always going to be at this X hour. It's going to be 6 hours after you've awakened. And then you take another sleep that could be anywhere from a half hour to an hour and a half long nap. And then you're awake and alert for the rest of the day. And in fact, great apes tend to be biphasic. So humans tend to be biphasic, but most of us work in the Western world are working in environments where taking a nap in the middle of the day is discouraged, not something you can typically do. And if you think about it, humans are not, you know, when we're babies, we're polyphasic. We're not, you know, monophasic or biphasic when we're babies. We're polyphasic, but we gradually kind of move into a biphasic phase. That's where you have the kid who will sleep through the night, but also take a nap in the afternoon. And then eventually society pressures us into being monophasic, even though all of us know that around 2 p.m. it would be awesome if we could just lay down and go to sleep and no one judged us. Or at least by all of us, I mean me. So naturally speaking, for most people, keeping in mind that this is, you know, this is a blanket statement and there are always exceptions to rules, most people would do best with monophasic or biphasic sleep on their own. But that doesn't mean that people haven't tried to come up with some alternatives.
Yeah, so I want to transition to talking about hacking sleep.
Okay.
Can we do it? Can you give yourself more waking hours without hurting your level of energy when you are awake, or your alertness, or your competence at tasks, or your health?
Right.
Can you get just as good a quality of life with less time in bed?
Well, there's some famous historical figures who have been the idea of getting very little sleep, or this whole polyphasic approach where you're taking naps throughout the day, seems to have been attributed to them, but most of them are
questionable.
Yeah,
yeah. Leonardo da Vinci is a big one.
That's the big example. Yeah,
so he's the one everybody talks about. He's a great Italian polymath of the Renaissance.
Yeah,
painter, inventor of everything, basically.
Yep.
At least on paper.
Right.
I don't know.
Didn't necessarily build everything, but he sure did invent a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but he is famous for supposedly taking advantage of polyphasic sleep. So he would take a number of naps throughout the day instead of one long chunk, and it would total to much less time than the average person spent sleeping in their chunks at night.
Yeah.
But that he would function perfectly well with this. I have had a hard time confirming this, and I'm very suspicious that it's an urban legend.
I'm pretty sure it is. The next one you have on our list is actually a little bit more of a credible example in a way.
Yeah, so Buckminster Fuller, mm-hmm. Bucky.
Yep.
Tell us about him, Jonathan.
Well, Bucky was supposedly getting by on just taking half-hour naps. According to Dr. Pyotr Wozniak, who's a biologist who's written extensively on the subjects of polyphasic sleep and monophasic sleep, biphasic sleep as well, suggests that perhaps this was a reputation that was not fully accurate, that it was more that Fuller would take naps whenever he could, but would also grab like a decent 6 hours sleep whenever the opportunity arose. It's just that sometimes the schedule would not allow it.
I guess it's hard to prove something like this.
Yeah. So beyond Da Vinci and Bucky, we have a few other names that are sometimes associated with this idea of polyphasic sleep. And they are, there's some pretty impressive names, if only there were evidence to support the fact that they were actually polyphasic sleepers. Thomas Edison and Nikola Tesla. So the rivals of
sleep wars.
You know, the sleep wars right after the current wars. Winston Churchill, Benjamin Franklin, and Thomas Jefferson have all been listed as being polyphasic sleepers, even though there's not really evidence to support that.
Now, Thomas Jefferson was the first one I heard, because I actually had a friend in high school who was enthusiastic about the idea of, you know, what's commonly called on the internet sometimes the Ubermensch sleep schedule.
Right.
This idea that, oh, well, you know, it's only because we're just not evolved enough that we're still sticking to this old kind of sleep. If you're really with it, if you know what's up, you'll take 4 15-minute naps a day.
More like half hour.
Yeah.
It's more like 6 half hour, because it adds up to 3 hours sleep total.
Right.
For a 24-hour period.
Well, there are different incarnations.
Yes, there
of
are.
This
there are
plan.
A lot of different versions of this.
But I had a friend in high school who I remember talking about this. I obviously don't know if he actually did it. He was at least interested in the idea for a while, and I remember him talking about trying to do it, but he stopped talking about it after a while, which makes me wonder if it didn't work.
Yeah.
As I think in a lot of cases, these people who talk about it end up stopping talking about it because it doesn't work.
I'll talk more about that in a second too. I've got a friend, his name is Eric Sandine. I'm calling him out only because we talked about this on a a different podcast that I do occasionally, mm-hmm. a friend of mine who decided he wanted to try this polyphasic sleep thing. And when he told me about it, I said, Eric, you are a crazy person. But he was determined to try it. And I think he might have attempted it for a day before deciding that that is probably not the best way of doing this.
Well, I don't want to make it sound too crazy or anything. I mean, like my friend in high school who tried this, he was a smart, capable guy. And a lot of the people you see talking about showing enthusiasm, at least for this plan online, they don't seem like complete nuts.
No,
but I'm skeptical that it would actually work.
Let me explain what's supposed to happen here.
Yeah.
According to polyphasic sleep, the idea is that you can get 3 hours total sleep per 24-hour period and have the rest of the time dedicated to waking hours where you can actually do whatever you want.
Video games for 5 hours.
Yeah. Right. Or, you're inventing.
Or, curing cancer for 5 hours.
Although people who try polyphasic sleep appear to have difficulty concentrating on any effort that requires learning or
really
or heavy. Yeah.
Wow.
Like they can do certain things really well, but anything that requires lots of mental processes, particularly learning new information, becomes really difficult. But the idea is that you split up your polyphasic sleep. You got these short nap sessions that are spread throughout the day. So you get six breaks essentially. So, and those six breaks, you sleep half an hour each. And this is one implementation of this approach. And the idea is that at first your body and your brain are like, what is going on? I need to go into REM sleep so that you don't go crazy.
Right.
And your health doesn't fall apart.
So you train your brain.
Yeah. The idea is that after you get through the initial resistance of your brain saying, this is wrong, you should go to sleep now. That after a couple of days, your brain says, fine, if you're going to be this way, then I'll go ahead and go into REM sleep as soon as you go to sleep. Well, here's the deal. When you suffer sleep deprivation for a long time, it is true that you will go into REM sleep faster when you do go to sleep than you would if you were getting regular night's sleep all that time. So, Joe, if you went and you were having 8 hours sleep for like 3 weeks, you'd go into REM sleep eventually after you fell asleep. You would get there. But if you stayed up for 3 days and then you went to sleep, you would hit REM sleep earlier than you would have been during that nice long stretch of plenty of sleep each night.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is that if you were able to engineer this and plan it out so that you have this half hour break, you would go into REM sleep nearly instantly as soon as you drift off. And that would be enough for it to sustain you for the next several hours until you had your next break, which would then sustain you till the next break, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the thing. The experts I was looking at, including Dr. Piotr Wozniak, suggest that this is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
That it is not likely to work. That, while the basics are kind of sort of based on truth, they're not themselves true. That being able to go right into REM sleep does not necessarily mean you're getting all the benefits you would with sleep, including, and probably most importantly, that immune system boost that you need.
Yeah, if we don't know everything about sleep yet, which we certainly don't, it seems premature to assume that if you're just getting that one of those four stages of sleep, that's going to be fine.
Right. And
we don't know exactly what all those other stages do.
Yeah, he looked into it quite a bit. He actually even conducted interviews with people. He said that in every case he was looking at, people who adopted this approach gave up on it after a short while because their health was failing. They were not feeling great. Some of them were having difficulty being able to concentrate on tasks for very long. He says, there are plenty of YouTube videos out there where if you watch the people who are talking about it, you just think, man, this person needs a good night's sleep. I mean, it's there. It looks rough. And he also talked about how a lot of them would end up coming down with colds or the flu because their immune systems were compromised. They couldn't fight off these diseases that otherwise, if they had had healthy sleep, they may have been able to, you can't necessarily say there's a direct role there,
right?
But there's enough of a correlation to make you, concerned. And according to his studies, and he's written a couple of different articles that are available online that are really helpful and go into this in detail. It's just that, people are generally monophasic or biphasic, that, we tend to work best under that. And in fact, a lot of the names we mention like Edison, are really biphasic and not polyphasic, that they would get, you know, a few hours sleep at night, few being like between 5 and 7, and then they would rest in the afternoon. And so most of those names, that's exactly what we, from those that we know what their sleep patterns were like, that's what they did. So it wasn't so much this whole, you know, take a nap and then work for hours and then take a nap. It was more get a night's sleep and then take a nap in the afternoon, which again, just like to point out again, I think we should all be doing. And if they would just put cots into the office, I would be happy to do it.
I'd have no trouble sleeping in my chair if that just didn't annoy everyone and make me look unprofessional.
Yeah, so, I mean, trying to hack your sleep this way is probably not a great idea.
Okay, well, let's transition to another solution then.
Okay.
Is it possible that drugs could give us more hours in the day without harming our health? Well, oh, I'd say...
Until you said that second part.
Yeah. So the first part is definitely true. Yes, yeah. You can use drugs to stay awake longer, and lots of people do. In fact, lots of us use caffeine to do this.
Yeah, I recently gave it up, but yes, yeah, well, I was heavily dependent upon it until recently.
Good on you, because it turns out, so some of the most familiar stimulants you'll know about, like caffeine, amphetamines, they're actually pretty effective at giving you the ability to stay awake.
Yeah, what's
or
happening?
To wake you up.
It's releasing neurotransmitters, yeah, that either they either promote wakefulness or they inhibit the neurotransmitters that would cause you to be sleepy. So it, in some cases, it's, you know, just perking you up by adding a boost to the chemicals in your brain that keep you awake. And in some, it's just keeping the ones that would put you to sleep at bay.
Yeah, definitely. It does not make health sense at all to rely on amphetamines. That's not going to get you anywhere.
No.
And it really does help to not rely too much on caffeine either.
Yeah. In fact, I was reading recently about how caffeine has been linked, not a proven correlation here, or, you know, not a causation thing, but has been linked to increases in things like cardiovascular diseases.
Mm.
And that, you know, limiting caffeine is good. Like, if you can have some caffeine, in fact, there's some health benefits to a little caffeine in your diet, but you don't tend to want to consume too much of it after, say, 2 p.m. or so, because it can actually interfere with your sleep cycles, even so much that, you know, let's say that you have some caffeine 6 hours before you go to sleep and you think you got a great night's sleep. Sleep studies have shown that people who had caffeine as late as that, like within that 6 hour time frame, were still having interrupted sleep cycles, and that it was, you know, that's how far caffeine can stretch, its effects can stretch. So just one of those things that, you know, if you really rely on caffeine, if you can have your main caffeine boost, and I'm not talking about going crazy and getting like a 48 ounce coffee at a coffee shop, but have your main caffeine boost in the morning to get you going and awake, and then to sort of wean yourself off as the day goes on. So you might switch to a lower caffeinated drink a little bit later in the day, and then by the time you get around 2 o'clock, you're cutting out the caffeine for the rest of the day. That seems to be a pretty good plan for being able to get a good night's sleep without having caffeine's effects interrupted.
Yeah, and then there are, of course, less familiar drugs that might actually be better than your old school stimulants.
Mm-hmm.
One of them that's gotten a lot of talk is the drug modafinil,
which I've heard has fewer side effects than a lot of these other ones do.
Yeah. And of course, we are not here advocating that you take drugs.
No,
we're just talking about this in theory. You can find people online who are hyping this drug and saying,
right,
I'm getting so much work done and I don't have all these bad side effects. I, again, really want to stress, do not use drugs for off-label use. I mean,
right,
people should speak to their doctors about whatever drugs they're going to use and be honest about the reason for which they want to use them.
And I think, you know, if you're using it so that you don't lose so much time sleeping, that's going to catch up to you eventually anyway for these other reasons that we've listed in this episode. And then we've got something here called short sleepers. So is this for people who are 4 foot tall or less?
No, this is actually the fact that some people really do require less sleep.
Oh, so this is an idea of, like, there are some people out there who 8 hours would be too much sleep for them. They might just need 4 or 5.
Yeah, I've seen different estimates for how common this is in the general population. I've seen estimates as small as 1 in 1,000 people, up to 1% of the population, or even up to 5% of the population.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know how common this is. But it does seem that it actually exists. There are some people, and they're very rare, but they can get by on less than 6 hours of sleep a night without any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
This, it doesn't give them negative health effects. They don't lose any of their competency. It's just how they are. It doesn't seem to be that you can train your body for this. It appears to be a genetic condition.
Mm-hmm.
So one study I want to talk about, though, that's really interesting and how this might bear on the future of reducing our need for sleep, it's a study led by Dr. Ying-Hui Fu of the University of California, San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And she was part of a team that discovered a gene variant that regulates the length of sleep. So Fu's team discovered that there's this particular mutation in a gene called HDEC2
humans. Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah.
No, I
it's one of your favorite genes.
I just wanted to sound smart.
But so this gene variant, this mutation, was correlated with human subjects who averaged about 6.25 hours of sleep every night, while relatives of those subjects who did not carry the mutation slept more than 8 hours. And it's important to note that this mutation may not be present in all or even most short sleepers. It was just correlated in this particular instance. And so there may be tons of other genes that create short sleepers.
Yeah, we've talked in the past about how complicated genetics are. Like it's you know, saying that this one gene is responsible for this one and only one thing is being overly simplistic in most cases.
Right. But then what Dr. Fu's team discovered that was very interesting was when they started studying transgenic mice. So mice have an equivalent gene to the human gene I was talking about. Instead of HDEC2, it's MDEC2.
Does M stand for mouse?
I don't know, but I would hazard a guess. So when the mice were given a substitute HDEC2 gene in place of that with the same mutation that these two test subjects had who were short sleepers, the mice stayed awake longer than normal mice.
Well, to be fair, they may have been wondering why they kept getting injected with human genes. That might have been, they might have, you know, I'd lose a lot of sleep. If you were injecting me with mice genes, I'd definitely be like, what is going on? But go on.
Well, you would be kept awake eating cheese all night.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
All right.
So the cool thing about this is that it's possible that what we learn about short sleepers actually could help somebody else become like them. Obviously, that's not knowledge that's available to us today.
Right.
But this kind of experiment with the mice shows, oh, you know, it might be possible to introduce genes like this or to at least learn enough about how genes regulate human sleeping patterns that we could make changes that would allow people to have more free time with no adverse health effects. And in fact, Dr. Fu of this study that I was talking about, she was quoted in a Wall Street Journal article where she was saying, "My long-term goal is to someday learn enough so we can manipulate the sleep pathways without damaging our health."
Yeah, that's, I mean, it would be really interesting to see that come to pass. Because again, like we've been talking this whole time, I mean, I understand people who want to be able to do more stuff. I mean, I certainly feel by the time I go to bed at the end of the day that I didn't accomplish nearly as much as I had hoped, just because there's too much to do and not enough time to do it in. So the idea of being able to shave off a few hours from this activity that I need to do in order for me not to, you know, have my immune system break down or suffer mental effects, to be able to control that a little bit more, it's certainly attractive. I love the idea of it. You know, I like the idea of going about it in a scientific manner that is not likely to lead to me feeling worse than I did when I started off. But, you know, I'm curious, are you still of the mindset where, man, I wish I could get rid of some of this sleep?
Oh, I mean, certainly if I could do it without negative health effects.
Yeah, if I could,
that's the whole thing. I mean, a lot of these things are like, oh, here's a trick. But then we have a lot of doubts like, oh, well, yes, you can use drugs to stay up, but they don't actually like improve your quality of life. They're right. going to make you sick and hurt you.
Right.
You can do this sleep schedule where you're awake for longer, but it seems to just be leading to sleep deprivation and, right. and people denying it. Or at least as far as we can tell, maybe somebody's getting by on polyphasic sleep. Who knows?
Right.
And then there are these short sleepers out there who a lot of people probably think they are, but they're not. They're just
kind of like multitaskers.
Yeah, exactly.
People think that they are super taskers, but it turns out they're not.
Yeah.
All right. I'll tell you right now. I know I'm not a short sleeper and I know I'm not a super tasker.
I have to agree on both counts, though. I wish I were a short sleeper. I mean, that would be great to have more time every day.
Yeah,
I would like that.
Yeah, I could see where, there are some things I would love to be able to do that I have put off because I just know that I don't have the time for it. So it would be nice to have a little extra time.
In much more modest news of improving the future of sleep, there is this other idea of having something like a sleep cycle alarm. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, is this the thing where it kind of monitors how you're doing when you're sleeping and wakes you up at the opportune time?
Yeah, and that actually appeals to me a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, because
too.
I hate getting up in the morning, you know.
Yeah.
Morning times can be great, but getting out of bed can be a real drag. Well, a lot of times the trouble there is that you are waking up. Your alarm clock is going off at a time when it is really not the best time in your sleeping cycle.
Yeah, it's completely external and disconnected from what's going on inside you.
Yeah. So the thinking behind an alarm clock like this is that it monitors your sleep cycles.
Right.
And that it can tell, oh, okay, now is the best time to wake him up.
Right. You're coming out of one of those deeper sleep troughs. And then this would make it easier and less jarring to get you up at this time. Because like I was saying earlier, like, you know, when you've got those very slow patterns going on in your brain, it's harder to wake you up. And that would make you probably feel more disoriented and grouchy. I'm a morning person, but I hate alarms too. I mean, I would much prefer to have one that as long as it was getting me up at around the right time each day, I mean, I don't need it to be exactly on the dot every single day in a row. I would love that.
Yeah. And so obviously I don't know exactly how well this particular model works, but if it could work as well as they claim, then I mean, that's a cool invention.
If I can get one that will just gently pat my head and say, there, it's all going to be okay. And then, you know, just kind of gently leads me down the stairs and cooks me breakfast.
It wakes you up with ASMR.
There you go. Yeah. Get on that.
Listen to me turn these pages.
Exactly.
Oh, I'm waking up now.
Yeah.
Oh, like, oh, paper.
Yeah. I'm going to go read. That really does sound appealing to me. I like the idea of, you know, because again, we're not talking necessarily about cutting down on the number of hours you're sleeping, but rather, finding the best way to wake up so that you are the most effective you can be for as long as you're awake. Because, I mean, there's that time. Like if your alarm goes off when you are in deep sleep, you know, I'm sure most of us aren't as productive or, proactive or however you want to put it for those first few moments because we're battling the fact that we want to still be asleep. So this would allow us to kind of transition more effectively into that wakeful state. So I think that would be great. Anyway, that kind of wraps up our discussion about the future of sleep. I don't think we'll be genetically engineering it completely out of our systems anytime soon. Maybe when the singularity comes and we become robots, we won't need to sleep anymore. But until that time, make sure you get your sleep. You know, if you can sneak in a nap, I highly recommend it. Yeah.
Do it.
If you can sleep in a nap at my work, that's weird. Because I don't think any of my coworkers listen to this podcast. And so it would just be a strange person to sleep in the office. But hey, if you can pull it off, that's kind of exciting. Don't try and pull it off, people. I don't want to be responsible for
it. Get all the angry
people.
Email.
Yeah.
I got fired because of you. I thought you were supposed to help me.
I don't want to get the angry email from our site director saying, you're going to get fired because of these people. That's what I don't want. But what I do want is for our listeners to write in and let us know what you think. You know, what do you think about the future of sleep? Or what other topics would you like us to talk about? Let us know. You can send us an email. Our address is fwthinking@discovery.com, or drop us a line on Facebook, Twitter, or Google Plus. We're at all three of those with the handle fwthinking. And we'll talk to you again really soon. Pleasant dreams.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.